Welcome to The Grand Life, Season 1, Episode 10, The Hard Parts. If you are joining us for the first time, you're in for a different kind of podcast. Normally, we start off with an interview about our topic, proceed to the stretch it takes, which takes on the form of an essay and challenges us all to stay flexible in our grandparenting, and finally, there's a short interview with a grandparent about their passion and how they pass that along to their grands. Oh, yes. And finally, a quick recommendation of a book, music, or a piece of art that you might share with your grand. Instead, this full episode is a roundtable discussion with a few participants who are helping me talk through some of the hard things about grandparenting that, let's face it, we all talk about over dinner or coffee or in the car. Grandparenting can be a challenge. It's not for the faint of heart, and it is something that takes a lot of energy. And the older we get, the less of that we have. So join me in listening to this podcast panel conversation. We are in Fishers, Indiana, and we're in the wonderful Ignite studios of the Fishers Public Library, the Hamilton East Public Library. So it's fun to be here. We have a couple guests who are going to remain anonymous, but you can say hi.
Hi.
And we have a few more coming, but we will just go ahead and start as we talk about the challenges of grandparenting. And, you know, the reason this came up was because as I've been getting more input from listeners, several of you have said that you love the podcast, but it raises the bar for grandparenting and it doesn't address some of the things that are hard about grandparenting. So we want to talk a little bit about that today. We all agree in here that grandparenting is the best thing ever, but we also recognize that there are challenges that we have to face. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how we face those challenges. And consequently, the guests are remaining anonymous just so that they can speak a little more freely and don't have to worry about offending. And so that's actually something that I want to talk about, is how the expectations of grandparenting come upon us as we become grandparents. And sometimes they're very clear, the expectations that our children have for us, but sometimes they're a little murky and we're not really sure what they are. So before I even go into that, though, I want to talk about how grandparenting has changed. Now, when episode one, we talked about the evolution of grandparenting, and we talked about how back in the day, grandparents played a very different role in their children's lives for the majority of grandparents. And so I wanted to talk to our guests first about what their experience with their grandparents were. What kinds of things do you remember about your grandparents and how involved they were in your lives?
Well, I actually only had one grandparent. Three of my grandparents had already passed by the time I was born. And my father's mother had 15 grandkids. And I was kind of stuck right in the middle of them. I wasn't like the first grandchild or the baby. And poor grandma, she worked up until the week before she died. So We didn't have a lot of time with grandma. But I do distinctly remember one time she lived close to our grade school. And at that time, kids had like an hour for lunch. And I remember going to grandma's, walking to grandma's house a block away for lunch. And I thought that was the biggest deal because I felt so special because it was just me, not, you know, the whole slew of grandkids.
So it's kind of a one-on-one.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. But like I said, I was kind of stuck in the pack, so.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I was going to reference a book called it's called Nanaville by Anna Quindlen. It's one of my favorite books. And she talks about parenting was different then, and of necessity, five children. If you had five children, it meant a different kind of attention and concentration, which meant also grandparenting was different. To repeat, because it deserves repetition, my paternal grandparents had 32 grandchildren. You know, and she said I double-checked because she wasn't even sure, 32 of them. So it wasn't common for the grandparents to be able to be super involved in their grandchildren's lives. I mean, think about that, trying to tend to 32 grandchildren, even Christmas presents or birthday presents or any of that. Now, how about you? What is your experience with your grandparents?
Both of my grandparents, both sets of grandparents were alive when I was born, but they lived like 45 minutes to an hour and a half away. So we didn't see them super often. So it wasn't like you could just stop by grandma's house. when I was 10, we moved to a small community where that's was the norm for most people. They lived next door to their grandparents. And I was so jealous because it's like, how to, you know, just to have that time was amazing to me. So I wouldn't say I knew them super well. My dad's parents were more standoffish and Victorian era type of parents because they were older when he was born. And I was the last grandchild. So they were always really, really old to me. My mom's parents, we saw them more often because they were a little bit younger, so they could go camping with us. And so I would see them more often. I felt closer to my maternal grandmother.
Yeah. So how has that informed your grandparenting? Like, have you thought about that, how you want your grandparenting to look?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want it to be more of the next door type of thing. And when I found out that my son and his wife were expecting, they were living up in Muncie. And I thought, oh, okay. I mean, that's going to be a lot of driving, but I'll do it, you know. But then they found out they were having twins and decided they better move to Fishers because her family is here. And obviously we're here. So they're like, okay, we're going to need help. And so they moved close by. So that's been a huge blessing.
Yeah.
To be able to be so close.
That's great. And how about you? In terms of how your grandparenting has been informed by how you were grandparented. So, you know, you said you didn't really, you were kind of one in a pack and all that. So how does that inform how you grandparent?
I have to kind of giggle to myself when you mentioned they were so far away. So we moved to this area for grandkids. And at the time, our son was here. Well, he only had one at the time, but he had three. And our daughter, I'm like, oh, we got to be there. We got to be there. Well, then since then, our son has moved to California with three of the grandkids. And but our daughter, when she was expecting her third child, lived kind of on the other side of town. And I mean, it was, you know, it would take 15 or 20 minutes to get there. But when she found out she was pregnant, she needed a bigger house and they were going to move like 30 minutes further away. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. You're going to need help, you know. I'm here to help you. So I just said, if you move this side of the river, it would be great. You know, I'll give you 2 days a week to babysit. Well, she moved right into our neighborhood,
which
is awesome.
Let's talk a little bit now about those expectations. About now, do you watch your grandchild 2 days a week?
I do.
Does she work?
She works. Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes it's from 7 in the morning till 5:30 at night. Sometimes it's 8 in the morning till 5:30 at night. And I love them, but those are my hardest days ever.
Yes.
Like, oh, my gosh. And when I said, like, oh, my gosh, I'm exhausted, she's like, well, Mom, you had three kids.
It's different.
Well, yeah, I was 30 years younger, you know.
Absolutely. I have a good friend, and we'll talk also about having twins, because you said something earlier about that. But I have a friend, and we get together if we've been watching our grandchildren for an extended period of time, and we just sit across from each other to breakfast and say, we're so exhausted. It is, and the older you get, the more exhausting it is, and you love it because you want to be with them.
Right.
How has your experience been with twins, being grandparent of twins?
Yeah, I've been trying to go over 2 days a week. I mean, like I said, she has other family, so she gets us scheduled out, which is wonderful, but I average about 2 days a week, and she's there, but a lot of times she'll go and take a nap, or, you know, I try to give her time to do what she needs to do for herself. Mm-hmm. But even if both of us are there having the twins, it's still exhausting, you know, because one will sleep for a little bit and then they'll wake up and the other ones, you know, they don't both sleep at the same time and eat at the same time like they did in the hospital. Because they were in the NICU for a month.
Yeah.
Before they came home.
So it's different, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And it's challenging.
Very different dynamic.
Yeah. And we have another guest here who I'm just going to ask you to go ahead and talk to me a little bit maybe about your grandparents and how that informs the grandparenting you're doing now.
Good question. Thanks for inviting me here.
Yeah.
I'll speak first to I had two sets of grandparents, you know. Even though I grew up in Indianapolis, we didn't go over there a lot. I mean, we made all the holidays, but my one set of grandparents, my grandfather was very old. Like, I remember him probably being 80 years old when I was born, probably.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't say 60. Because when you're a child,
very old,
you know, it seems like 60, right?
Oh, yeah, right. And then, so I was probably, you know, 10 when he passed away at 90. And mm-hmm. I just remember him you know, kind of being stern and just kind of sitting there at that point, you know, and he had had five kids. And so he was kind of done with grandparenting. And, mm-hmm. and I was toward the last of his grandparents. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of interaction with him, whereas his wife, my grandmother on my dad's side, was still, she was 10 years younger than him. But I think she thrived on family. And so it was always fun to go over to their house. Didn't feel ignored, but also, like I said, I was probably seventh in line as far as that goes. So I think they had kind of seen it, you know, as far as, oh, we've
been there, done that.
Yep, yep.
The thrill was over.
Exactly.
I feel sorry for that. You know, we have 8 grandchildren at this point, and I do feel sorry about that because I think I can see that coming, that I might be the point where it's not as magical because I'm a little older and we've had grandchildren, you know. And I was one of those last ones of the grandchildren, and I felt a little like, you know, maybe I wasn't all that, you know. I was
right.
just the next grandchild.
Right.
So, and then on the other side, did
on the other side, my grandfather was had diabetes pretty bad, and so I was just talking to my mom about this. It's emotional because he passed away at 65, but wanted to hit that point for his wife because then she could get Social Security.
Oh, yeah. So he was working hard to stay alive.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just remember, I mean, there was a warm, loving feeling there. His daughter was their only child.
Yeah. So, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being transparent about that. I mean, and so your relationship with that grandfather, how old were you when he died?
Probably less than 10.
And that's a love lost, you know, that's a love mourned that you don't have that grandparent. And as you talk about your grandparents, how does that inform how you want to be a grandparent? And let me just say that you are also a grandparent of twins. So we have a couple here.
Right.
So, how is that informing you?
It's been thrilling, first of all, to just be part of it, just experience it. Still don't know how the twin thing is going to affect us. That'll be a little bit of a challenge. I think it'll also force us to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we've talked about it a little, but it hasn't been a huge issue. Like, okay,
right.
Do we take one of them to
separate
the park?
Them and take
yeah.
one so you have that one-on-one?
Right. And then the number of relationships there just doubled or tripled, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's gonna be interesting. But I want to be an involved grandfather. So
yeah.
That's we'll see what that
looks entails.
Like.
And that is the challenge. I think that, you know, it's interesting as we have kind of entered into this Facebook world where we see and can compare, you know, some grandparents are taking their grandchildren to Alaska and some are, you know, have done tie-dye shirts for all their grandkids or, you know, you start looking at that and it's the same, I think, it's a very parallel comparative world like the millennials live in where they see what everybody's doing and they think, oh, I should be doing that or why aren't I doing that? And so then as grandparents, we also feel that way. If you want to speak to that at all? You don't struggle with that?
Mm-mm.
How about you?
No, because I don't get on Facebook.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I think that might be the key. And actually, millennials are starting to drop off of Facebook as well because I think they're recognizing that it's not a healthy thing to always be worrying if you're doing the right thing or if you're doing enough of something. And we as parents never had to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wonderful, that kind of freedom when we were bringing up our children. We didn't have to worry that we weren't doing the right thing. We were just doing what, mm-hmm. I mean, there were only a few books about parenting out at the time. So. Let's talk a little bit about the expectation of travel. So you mentioned that you have a child who lives out in California. Is that correct?
I have 5 grandkids in California.
Oh, you just have a child.
Two of my sons live in California.
Oh, 2 of your sons.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the expectation of your – do they come to you or do you feel like you need to go to them? How does that work?
I mean, it's more economical for my husband and I to fly there than a whole family, you know, fly here.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to come maybe once a year and then we'll try to get out
a couple times a year. My husband's still working, and so he can't get a lot of time off. And they're not even in the same proximity. Like, one's 12-hour, they're like a 12-hour drive from each other. So if we go to one, we actually have to, like, hop on a plane and fly to the other one. So it's usually we'll go to one, the next time we'll go to the other one, you know.
Yeah.
And that three-day rule, yeah, is right. We never stay. We usually, it's just a long weekend that we stay.
Yeah. We are starting to discover that 3 or 4 days is about as much as family can handle, especially because we, as the grandparents, are kind of entering into their world, taking over a bedroom, you know, if they even have a bedroom. Sometimes it's a couch.
And, and it's kind of the opposite. Like, my husband's like, I can't take more than 3 days of this chaos, you know?
I hear you. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, as we become empty nesters, because life is quieter and more controlled, and we can kind of do our day the way we want to do our day. And then when we go into that chaos, it is shocking. You know, you're not ramping up to it.
I don't think our kids were this chaotic, were they? I'm like, I don't remember, but maybe we were just younger and it didn't bother us.
Well, and you've ramped up. You know, when you're young, you ramp up. You have one, you have two, you have three. It's not like all at once. And when you come in as a grandparent, it's all at once.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the granddaughters are only 5 months old, so we haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be. Well, the next thing we're going to talk about is the expectations of, or the idea of, the compliance of all these different aspects of being a grandparent that really bleed into what the parents have to deal with. And that is things like the birth of the baby and the feeding and the sleeping and the diapering and the disciplining and the traveling and the schooling as they get older. So let's talk a little bit about the birth. And I actually wanted to read a little something from Anna Quinlan's book again, because I just love her so much. This is in reference to not getting invited into the birthing room. I have a bit of a sideline in practicing medicine without a license, or some people might argue not much of a clue, and my inclination would have been to ask too many questions, make a fuss, all while someone else was actually having contractions. Not a good look, or a good benchmark for the future. Begin as you mean to go on, a British preacher once said many, many years ago, and boy, is that good advice on delicate human relations. So begin as you mean to go on. She said it was good that she wasn't in the birthing room. Did any of you get to experience the birth of a grandchild? And how did you feel if you didn't get to?
I mean, I knew I would not be invited in for my daughter-in-law's, but when my daughter had her first, I'm like, oh, please, I really want to be there. And she was like, Mom, it's no. And so then each consecutive one, when she had her second one, I was home babysitting with the first one. So actually, the first one was the only really option. And she said no, and it kind of hurt because I would just want to experience that with you, but.
Yeah.
You know, I took it okay.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you were awake and aware when you had your own baby.
Yeah.
Babies. Because that's one of the things that I talked to a doctor about. And she said one of the feelings that some parents have is, I want to be in there because I've never seen a birth. I was under anesthesia when I had a baby. But not the case for you. But yeah. So if that's something that's important to them, you have to kind of just, you know, they didn't ask you, so you don't do it. And that's just the beginning of learning how to keep your mouth shut and just go with the flow. And that seems to be the advice I read in every book about grandparenting, is keep your mouth shut. Now, how about you? Were you able to be in the, well, the twins were
no.
C-section,
yeah, they
correct?
Were C-section. And it wasn't her scheduled C-section. They took them early because she ended up with preeclampsia. Mm-hmm. But we were at the hospital, you know, we got to see her before she went back, and waited with the rest of the family while they were, you know, in surgery. And then we got to see her afterward, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, even if it hadn't been a C-section thing, I wouldn't have asked to be in, like you said, because she's my daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
You know,
that's funny how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different dynamic. It is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if she would have asked, I certainly would have jumped at the chance, but that was never an expectation of mine. I mean, I was thrilled when she asked me to go to an ultrasound appointment. So that was a big deal for me. So,
yeah. Yeah. I would think, you know, when I'm talking about compliance, I don't mean to sound negative, but I do think that there are certain aspects that where your child feels pretty strongly about something and then might push up against you in certain ways. I'm specifically thinking about right now the whole sleeping issue with children. The rule, and I'm doing that in quotes, the rule to be with sleeping, but I believe it was that they should sleep on their stomachs. Is that what you...
I think so. So if they spit up,
right,
they wouldn't choke on it.
They wouldn't choke on it. Is that...
We were told on the side.
On the side. Okay. You might be a little younger and you felt like it was the side. I do think, actually, we went through stomach and then the side thing because they told us to roll up a towel mm-hmm. and put it in so they wouldn't lean over. So the expectation was that you either put them on their stomachs or put them on their sides. And now the expectation is that to comply with what the doctors are saying, that the babies have to be on their backs.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's so interesting because, you know, the idea of complying with what the doctors say, it almost, when you get far enough away from it and you're a little more objective as a grandparent, you start to be like, oh, this is silly. But do you feel like that at all?
Not about the sleeping, but I remember I think I fed my kids baby cereal at 6 weeks old because the doctor said, if you want them to sleep through the week or through the night, they're hungry. Feed them.
Yeah.
And, oh, no, my daughter. Nope. They have to wait till they're, I don't know.
5 months now.
Yeah. So I'm like, for cereal? Seriously?
Yeah. In order to get them to sleep. feeding challenges. Those are other things that you have to always do. And the whole swaddling movement, which is so interesting.
Well, with the twins, that was interesting because one twin was fine with the swaddling. The other twin always got a foot out.
Yeah.
You know, because she was always kicking. Yeah. So
it's funny when I'm watching our children with their first and their second and, you know, it's their turn. They get to do it mm-hmm. the way they want to do it. I have mm-hmm. to say that to myself a lot. Is that something that goes through your mind?
Yeah. And eating, this is an eating issue, but so my daughter's, when the third one came along, she's so busy getting stuff on the table. She would just put food on the tray and he would just shovel it in. It'd be all over. He'd be a mess. I'm like, why don't you sit and feed him with a spoon, you know, or a fork or... I thought he'd never learn how to use a spoon or fork because it was just always like caveman style, just shovel it in, you know.
And how old is he now?
Two.
And he's just
better. Matter of fact, the other day, a blueberry dropped on the floor and he'd go, uh-oh, where before, like, the whole meal would be on the floor and it didn't bother him at all.
Do they have a dog?
No.
Well, that's too bad. Dogs are so good for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Diapering, I think I mentioned the diapering thing was so confusing to me. Our daughter decided to use a system of diapering that involved a cloth diaper and then a cover. And oh, I don't know. It had three different components. And I got to the point where I finally said, I'm sorry. When I come to watch the babies, please, we're just using a disposable. Please help me. I can't do this anymore. It was too difficult, and I felt like a failure, you know, if things were leaking out. I was like it was my fault. Are your kids all using disposables?
Yes.
Wow. That's a blessing, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And disposables these days look so much different than they did.
Yeah, they have little Velcro things, so you don't have to rip the diaper with the sticky stuff. You know?
Yes, and they're so much slimmer. Mm-hmm. I have a video, again, DVDs of our children running around in diapers, and it looks like they have, like, I don't know.
Like they were full.
Yeah, exactly, all the time. Disciplining is something that I think, of course, you're with the twins. You haven't gotten to their... Although some parents have very, very strict rules about how often, how long you let them cry before you pick them up. Do you have any of that yet?
No, they're pretty much to the, because the doctors told them at this stage you can't spoil them. So, you know, if they're crying, go ahead and comfort them.
Okay.
So the only time that we've had discussion we've had is when they have tummy time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then it's like, okay, how long? Because they will let them get frustrated with tummy time.
Okay.
And so I always look to them. For, okay, have they screamed long enough yet? Can I pick them up? You know, because I don't want to rush the process, so I want to be respectful. Yeah. But I also don't like hearing them cry. So,
yeah. What about you?
Discipline is a real hard issue for me because I am babysitting for them two mm-hmm. days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl she just turned four, but when she was three especially, I mean, she's a sass. She's got spirit. And, I mean, it's so hard as a grandma. You have to discipline them, but yet I feel like I'm the meanie, you know?
Right.
I mean, she would throw horrible fits and just, you know, so it's hard to discipline when you want to be the fine grandma. I mean, you can't say yes to everything. Matter of fact, this was hilarious when you say they can't run in the street. So they live on a street, end of a cul-de-sac, hardly anything. And she lets them, you know, ride their bikes out there. Well, the little this is before he was two, was toddling out into the street. And I'm like, grabbed him and no, you can't do that, because I want him to have respect for the street when he comes to our house.
Right.
And his big sister, who was three at the time, came marching out. She was mad because I made him cry, and she got her, I had my video of it. It was hilarious. Shaking her finger at me that I'm fired because I was making him cry.
I love
so,
it.
So, yeah, she had some sass, and she's been the hardest one to, like I said, discipline. And it's hard to do it because I want to just, you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And when I would tell my daughter about it, I said, oh, we had a rough day. And she said, well, what'd you do? And I'm like, I wanted to spank her so bad, but she was, why didn't you? And I'm like, because I'm grandma. I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. And many children now, many of our children, in fact, all of them at this point, are against spanking completely, which, you know, does change the way, you know, you have responsibility for them when you're watching them, but you have no authority. It is really hard to rein them in, especially when you have ones that are very strong-willed and have a strong sense of who they want to be, you know. And they've been brought up. I mean, the kids now, I think, are brought up with more of that, this sense of strength and, you know, I'm strong, I'm brave, I can do these things. And you don't. And parents tend not to want to squash them, so they kind of allow for that. And it's kind of an interesting, it's a sociological experiment at this point. I'm just so interested to see what happens. I don't know.
It's a fine line.
It is. Right. Yeah. So do you have some parents who are okay with spanking, or all of them? Or
I have one of my sons does not discipline at all. Okay. That's the crazy chaotic house. And when they lived here, I felt, and I was around him more, I said something to him about, you know, if you don't take charge now, when they're teenagers, you're going to have a problem. And he said, Mom, he's an attorney. And he says, Mom, I argue with people all day. I just don't want to argue with them when I come home.
Interesting.
Like, you don't argue.
Right. Yeah.
This is the rule.
Yeah.
So now that they're away and we hardly ever see them, we just let it go.
You can let it go. It's a lot easier.
I mean, but it's sad because I don't know how they are going to grow up as teenagers. It worries me.
Yeah. Have you talked to your children about how they're going to do that in the future?
No, we haven't.
Do you have a feeling?
Discussion material.
Do you have a feeling like how they might, you think, discipline, or how were they disciplined? How was your son disciplined?
He was spanked and he had clear boundaries.
Okay. That's going to be interesting.
I don't know.
Do you know about your daughter-in-law?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, no, he was the one, because before we started the spanking, we tried the counting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when he started counting with me, I was like, okay, this is not going to work. It's time to start spanking. Because I'm not getting his attention, you know.
Yeah.
You thought you were teaching him how to count.
Yes. So, I'm not sure about our daughter-in-law and how she was raised. We've never talked about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future. Car seats. I mean, the whole compliance on car seats. How do you feel about that? Even with the twins, they're in car seats, right?
Right. And we haven't had to deal with that yet. We've not actually had to take them anywhere.
Okay.
So it's just been getting their car seats into the stroller. And just figuring out how that system works.
Might be easier to switch cars.
To just drive their car if we have to take them somewhere.
Yes, we've actually done that. How about you?
Yeah, that's what I do too, because we don't have, our car will not fit three car seats. Mm. And so if we are ever going to take them somewhere, we just switch out cars.
It's crazy because they're in car seats.
And luckily the oldest one can crawl in the back and buckle himself, you know, into his booster seat. So that helps.
Yeah. I remember that great feeling of responsibility, like having a child and putting him in my car and feeling like, what if I didn't buckle it right? Or what if it's not quite tight enough? Or because you've seen videos all your life of, you know, those car crash dummies, and you're just like, oh my goodness, I hope I do this.
Actually, we had taken our car seat out because we needed to fold one of the back seats down and just put it in and fastened it maybe, but didn't anchor it or whatever.
Anchor it, yeah.
Had driven around that way for probably 3 weeks with a child in it. And the dad one day said, do you know this is not even fastened in, right? I'm like, no.
Oh, no.
My husband put it in. I figured he put it in.
They survived, thank goodness, right? And I think that, you know, it's so interesting, the relationship we have with our children, because we do want to comply. We want to be the best grandparents we can, but sometimes we make mistakes. And some children, their personalities are such where they'll be like, oh, well, you know, it happens. That happens to me too. I sometimes don't do it right. But then there are other children who just get very upset about it and very defensive. And I think especially it's hard with daughter-in-laws, because daughter-in-laws are very possessive and want their children and loyal, and they want their children to be taken care of correctly. And if you mess up at all, you can be in real hot water with your daughter-in-law. Have you had that experience?
No, but I can.
You can see that others might.
Yeah, we haven't, because I mean, our daughter-in-law is just so easygoing.
Yeah,
she's just such a joy to be around.
Yeah, you're very lucky.
Yes.
Because
yes, very blessed.
There's a reason why there's a stereotype of a mother-in-law.
My sister has a daughter-in-law who you just look at her wrong and she gets upset.
Yeah.
You know, so she has to be very careful how she interacts, even with her son.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very blessed.
Yeah. I've heard horror stories about that. And I only have one daughter-in-law and she doesn't have any children yet. So I've had lots of time to get a sense of what I should and shouldn't do. So, you know, because we do walk a fine line. We try really hard. I think that in the back of our heads is always we want to be the best grandparents and meet the expectations and comply with what we need to comply with. But we also are human and we make mistakes. So it doesn't always work out. This has been a wonderful time together. I really appreciated you coming in, and I think people will love listening to it because they'll feel not alone. They'll feel like they
can relate.
Yeah, they can relate to all those. And I'm going to ask my listeners now, if you want to write in, if you want to call in, we would love to hear from you about your own challenges and how you feel about grandparenting. And, you know, we'll try to keep that door open, that whole idea of conversation about challenging parts of grandparenting. So thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you coming today.
Thank you.
The perfect ending to our podcast about the hard parts of grandparenting was that at the very end, somebody right outside the studio door started wailing loudly after a craft that went awry and a long morning at the nearby farmer's market.
You know those are our
grandparents. I know, those are our grandparents. I recognize them.
Remember, I'm always looking for people to join in, so follow us on Facebook, share the episodes you like, and comment as much as you'd like. I loved hearing from you about the Cousin Camp episode and the last one on solo grandparenting. If you're feeling bold, I also have a phone number, 317-572-7876, specifically for the podcast. You'll never get a live person, but if you write down what you want to say and read it to us, you'll probably be on the podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Emily Morgan, and this is The Grand Life.
Today's podcast was written and hosted by Emily Morgan, my grandma, and was produced and edited by Mike Morgan, my grandfather. Email them at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com.